MacCast, Saturday, February 5th, 2011, Macworld Expo 2011, Part 2. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. I have part two of my Macworld coverage to bring to you today. You know, when I go to Macworld, one of the best things about going there is actually just getting to hang out with a lot of the Mac community. There's a lot of people that I only see once a year, and that once a year is at Macworld. So kind of getting to reconnect with those people, as well as just see what's going on the show floor and talk to developers and people who are creating great products for the Mac and the iPhone and the iPod and iPad. That's all really fun stuff. And so I always have a great time every year when I get to Macworld. And in this episode, we're going to open up. I actually got a chance to talk with Callie Lewis, who I hadn't seen in about a year. Callie does the GeekBeat TV podcast and show, along with a bunch of other shows, as you'll hear. She's working on some new projects, and she did a great featured session. She was part of a panel called Tech Girls, and you'll hear a little bit about that in the opening of this. And then we get out on the show floor and talk to a number of vendors who had some other great Mac and iOS products. So I hope you enjoy this episode. Before we dive into that, I do want to take a quick moment and thank one of our show sponsors, Furonix, makers of Deep Freeze. You know, Deep Freeze is a really cool tool if you run any kind of Mac lab, or you run a business where you need to have a Mac or a PC. It actually works Mac or PC in a shared area, some place where multiple people might have access to that system, might be using it, and you want to make sure that you can lock it down, make sure that nothing can happen to the operating system, that it's going to run from day to day, that somebody can't install malicious software on there, that they can't install something on there that you don't want, but you still need to have it be a usable system. You can't have it so locked down that they can't get in there and work with it and do stuff. I mean, it needs to be a working computer. It's also really great, though, for anyone who might be needing to test software or evaluate. So if you're an IT professional, maybe you're in an office situation and you need to test the latest version of a new application that came out, but you want to make sure that you try it out and run it through its paces before you actually put it into production, into deployment in your environment. What's great about Deep Freeze is you can run Deep Freeze, freeze your system in its current state. And then the way the software works is it does allow you to go ahead and install software. You can do anything on top of that computer that you want, just like it wasn't locked down or didn't have any software on it at all. And you can test out the software, play with it, try it out, make sure that it doesn't do anything to the system. And if you want to remove it, well, you don't have to run an uninstaller. You don't have to worry about what parts of the system it might have put little bits and pieces in. You simply reboot that computer, and Deep Freeze will restore the system back to the state it was in before you installed the software you were testing. Because you froze that system with Deep Freeze, it locked it in that state. And anytime you reboot the system, it restores back to that original state. That's why it's great for lab environments, because you don't have to run through, you don't have to worry about what somebody might have installed or where they might have put bits and pieces. You just simply reboot the system, and it's back to how you had it originally set up. And you can set up thaw spaces for persistent data that your users may need to have. So you can define a whole user folder. You can define specific areas on hard drives where users can save off documents and information that need to persist, that shouldn't get wiped out between sessions. So great software for all those applications. If you have a need for it, you can get a lot more details on the Furonix website. Explains how all this stuff works, and they also have trials available, and you can check it out for yourself. I encourage you to do that. Just head to Furonix.com. You can get all the details, and a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So let's get in. Let's talk to Callie Lewis, who we sat down with at Macworld, had a little conversation about what she was up to, how she uses her Mac, and a little bit about the whole Tech Girls project that she's working on, and then also get out on the show floor and talk to some vendors. This is part two of my Macworld 2011 coverage. Enjoy. So one of the great parts about coming to Macworld is running into old friends and people that you don't see in a while. And yesterday I was in a great session. I don't remember what it was called, but I've got Callie Lewis here. It was called, I want to say Women in Technology, or...
It's actually called Tech Girls. Okay. So Shelley Hall, who organized the panel and was moderating it, is doing a project called Tech Girls with a Z, T-E-C-H-G-I-R-L-Z. And it's all about, you know, inspiring younger girls to be more involved in technology. And so she's been kind of doing a documentary about some women in technology. So it was about that.
It was a really, really great panel, and something you don't see at a lot of tech conferences. I thought it was really, really interesting.
Yeah. So this is Macworld's first year to have a group of women, all women, up on stage. There were five of us. Five. Paul Kent was super excited about it, apparently. And I think they're going to do it again next year and just really focus on women and technology and encouraging that, because there is a lack of it, and younger girls are just now being exposed to it in more of a broad way, that it's even an option for them to get into technology as a grown-up.
Right, and then they talked, you know, about the whole mentoring thing, and just girls seeing people like yourself, and I think Natalie Morris was on that panel, and Amber MacArthur, and you know, they see them online and YouTube and you know, on television and things like that, and that's really important.
It really is, and you know, I've been blessed to have young girls watching me the entire time I've been doing my show online. And they email me, you know, saying thank you for showing me that it's okay to embrace this passion. And there were several teenage girls in the audience. I didn't even realize it until the lights came up and the end of it, and then they came up to me. And, you know, it was really interesting because two of them specifically knew what they wanted to do. And they were just sure that they want to do this or that. And one of them was like, I want to go into science and I want to cure cancer. I mean, she said it with such determination. I think that's awesome.
Yeah, that's very, very important. So it was great to see you up there doing that. But I wanted to get you on the show because I don't think we've ever talked about, and you're a Mac user, obviously, but just when did you get into Macs? What was your first Mac? How did it come about?
We've known each other for years and we haven't even talked about this. I can't believe it. So in 2005, I was a Windows user, and then 2005, my brother-in-law, his name was Curtis, he convinced me to try the Mac. And we started with a Mac Mini. He was funny. He was just so vibrant. He was, anything he told you to do, he'd do it, because he was just so sure of himself, and he was great. He's now dead. He died of cancer, but right before he got cancer, he had gotten us into this. So I was very thrilled that he did. So we started with a Mac Mini, and at that time it was obvious that podcasting was out there and interesting, and so started kind of moving into the podcasting world. Started with audio a little bit, but then moved quickly into video, because it was obvious that that was where it was going to be, for me at least. And everybody started talking about, you know, what are you going to podcast about? Well, you do something that you're passionate about, that you can talk about on and on and on and on. And that was technology. And Apple had just released the very first video iPod in October of 2005. And kind of knew that people would be getting that for Christmas, needing content. And that was the case, it turned out to be. So quickly moved from the Mac Mini to, I believe it was an iMac at that time, and then kept going from there.
The rest is history, and I bet you, like a lot of us, you have a ton of Macs now.
Yes, a Mac Pro, an iMac, like four, you know, MacBook Pros.
That's what happens. I want to ask you, so you talked a little bit about, you started playing around with the audio and podcasting was just breaking and stuff like that, but you mentioned in the session yesterday that, you know, you really hadn't started out to be on camera and video, like that wasn't your initial aspiration. So two things I'm curious about. One, if you had ever played around with audio or video on the PC before switching, or if it was just coming to the Mac, and then sort of just how did that where did the interest in podcasting and going into video and suddenly saying, yeah, I'm going to be on camera? Because that's a big thing.
Yeah. I was extremely shy. I never had any interest in it. So I never played with audio or video on the PC. And I honestly don't believe that I would be where I am today if Curtis hadn't gotten us into the Mac. And because it was so super simple, you know, everything about it was just easy and everything worked. The idea to actually do it was just a discomfort at my day job, really, knowing that I didn't want to be doing what I was doing for the rest of my life and wanted to push myself. I'm very self-motivated and I just wanted to do more and be more than what I was doing. And so it was really just a discomfort and wanting to get back into something that I loved, which was technology.
Well, it obviously worked out very well. it wasn't a bad decision. So, you know, have a lot of Macs. We talked about that. But I would assume now that you also have a lot of other devices like iPhones and iPads and stuff like that. And I wanted to ask you about, so you've been along for this sort of transition. The Mac is now a third of what Apple sells. The other two-thirds is iOS devices. So, you know, how do you think that has sort of changed Apple and the Mac landscape?
Oh, obviously, it's thrown them forward. You know, it's amazing to see people walk around with the iPhones, and half of them don't even know what the iPhone can do. And so, I'm constantly teaching strangers because I get into these conversations about what their computer in their hand can do. You know. And yeah, I certainly have an iPhone. I have an iPad. The thing with the iPad is I love the iPad. And I love, you know, all of the apps in the App Store. I think the App Store is still better than the Android Store. I honestly love Android as well. And I'm glad to see that there is a little bit of competition because I think Apple needs it. And the thing with the iPad, though, is I was making fun of Apple when they first announced the iPad because they were talking about it being a lean back experience at home. And I thought, no freaking way. Nobody's going to use this at home. They're going to take it out and about. And I was so wrong. You know, I don't use it out and about. It's too big for me. I like the 7-inch tablets, actually. Oh, wow. Even though Apple says that's crap. But I use the iPad a lot at home as a kind of a third monitor. But I don't take it out and about. And I find it really interesting that Apple has, you know, focused on the lean back experience at home, yet they say, so obviously they know that that's an issue, a portability issue, right. But they throw down the 7-inch as well. Right. You know, it's kind of a disconnect there.
Do you think they might change that philosophy?
I don't know. They don't tend to change on the fly like that, so probably not.
I don't know. Steve Jobs has this famous thing. You know, he said, we're not doing a 7-inch. We tried it, and then it doesn't work. And everybody, all these other guys are going to find out when their tablets come out. So I guess we'll see, because they're coming out really, really fast. But, you know, a lot of people like them.
A lot of people do. And men specifically, they can fit a 7-inch tablet in their back pocket. They can carry it around very, very easily. And I can carry it around in a smaller purse than having to carry around a backpack, you know, for the iPad. So,
yeah, I personally take my iPad out a lot. I'm leaving my MacBook at home, so I'm a little different, but it depends on usage, though, too. So that's another thing I wanted to ask you about, because a lot of people, myself included, when the iPad first came out, said it's really a sort of a content consumption device. I'm not producing my podcast on my iPad yet, at least. But I think that might be changing with some of the accessories and stuff like that. So like walking around the show floor now, you've got things like the iRig, and you're starting to finally see things that dock into the dock connector. So, I mean, do you think tablets, that's going to change? Not, you know, we can talk about 7-inches or iPads or whatever, but that we're going to see more and more people doing content creation on these kinds of devices as opposed to a laptop or a traditional desktop?
I think so. I think where it is right now in the beginning stages of it is music. Ton of music apps out there for creating music, and obviously a lot of like bands are using iPads or tablets to create or to, you know, play their music that, that they do. Even did you go to the Cirque du Mac party?
Yeah.
So they had, I don't know if you noticed, but the band, which is Paul Kent and
Dave Hamilton
and several Chapin others.
And, Brian Chafin, Dave Hamilton, I'm Bob Levitis, yeah, Paul Kent, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
Chris Breen.
Yeah, they all were up on stage singing along, and they had their music sheets on their iPads right there on stage. So I think it's starting in music, and it will move to other areas.
Yeah, the Gorillaz produced that album that they put out. I don't know if you know that they did a whole album that they did all on the iPad.
I don't pay any attention to music because I love music, but I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we've seen all these instrument apps, right? I mean, there are people actually producing music. I think but it's been kind of, little kitschy things or kind of for fun kind of things. But I do think that's changing, right?
Yeah, I think it's changing, and I think there will be more apps in terms of content creation. There is. Oh, so you said the iRig thing. I mean that. That certainly is going to make forward moves in terms of audio podcasting and stuff. Of course, the iPad will have to have a camera in order to do video on it. But once that comes out, I assume that there will be lots of apps that will be revolving around that.
Yeah, I don't think we have long to wait for that.
I don't think so either.
So, you know, speaking to the gadget, Geek Beat. I keep wanting to call it Geek Brief.
Yes. It's now geekbeat.tv.
Right. And so that's a lot about gadgets and cool things that you find. You mentioned you like to go around and see all the cool latest and greatest stuff. So we're here at Macworld. Was there anything particularly standout this year as you're walking around that you're probably going to be covering on the show?
Yeah, and I have to apologize because it's low, low, low tech. So what it is, did you see the Easy Tie? Okay, so it's called Easy Tie. It's EZTY.net, and it is a replacement for zip ties. It's reusable, recyclable zip ties. You don't cut them off when you're done with them. You just undo them and take them and, just keep reusing them. So they're like $5 for a dozen, so a little obviously more expensive than zip ties, but you reuse them, so you're not continuing to buy them. So I love that. It's the little things in life, I suppose, but that was my favorite thing here.
Oh, very cool. I have to go check that one out because I haven't seen that. But a show like this is great because you go around to all those little side booths and the smaller booths, and you find these little gems of products that people, it's like, why didn't somebody think of this before? That's a really great idea. And I would imagine cable management is a big thing with all the video you do in your life, right?
It's huge, yes. And maybe that's why, because I have cables everywhere and constantly reorganizing, constantly re-zip tying everything to keep our, the studio in order. And I'm a klutz, so I trip over things very, very easily.
Well, very, very cool. So we were talking about some of the projects that you're working on. You're expanding some of the video. You have the new web beat. And you're doing some other things too, I think, right?
Yeah, so Livid Lobster is my new parent company. It holds Geek Beat, also Web Beat, which is a new show focused on web topics, viral videos, startups, and the Pelpina. The host is Pelpina. She's awesome. She actually came from TV, but she has quit her job on TV and so solely focused on the web, which is awesome to see. And we have some new projects coming up here very shortly, some new shows under Livid Lobster. And we're also doing some corporate videos. Corporations keep coming up to us and asking us to help them produce video because they know they have to get into it. Otherwise, they die. And so we're helping them out in that area.
Oh, great. So you have Revision 3, which is the Geek Beat, and then Livid Lobster is where people should keep on top of all the other stuff?
Exactly. LividLobster.com is actually going through a revamping period at the moment. It's going to very soon have all of the aggregate content, so you can go one place and see everything that we're doing. Otherwise, so Revision 3 is our distribution partner for Geek Beat, and they're awesome. But you can go to Livid Lobster and quickly find everything else.
Yeah,
I would imagine I could do a Google for Callie Lewis and find a lot of stuff too. So people can do that. Callie, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to talk to us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm here with Studio Neat, and I'm talking to Dan, and they make a product called the Glyph. And if you're a geek and have been following the Kickstarter project, you probably know about the Glyph. But I'll let Dan tell you, what is a Glyph? Why do I need one?
Sure. So the Glyph is a simple accessory for the iPhone 4. So you can use it as a stand to prop your phone up at various angles for watching videos or doing FaceTime. And then it also has a universal threaded tripod screw on the bottom, so you can mount it to any tripod as well.
Right, and it's a really simple and unique design, which I think is why so many people really like it. And it solves a problem that a lot of us have, that the iPhone makes a great camera, but there's been no really good way to get it on a tripod, it seems like. A lot of people have tried at this, so... Can you explain a little bit of how it works? It looks like it just kind of slides on one corner.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that was the impetus for the design is, using this iPhone, as a great camera. So basically, it's very simple. It's like a little kind of L-shaped shoe, and you basically slide it into the corner. It can fit on any corner of the iPhone, and it's designed specifically for the iPhone 4, so it's has a really tight, nice, snug fit. So it's really stable, kind of surprisingly, for how simple and small it is.
Yeah, and that's key, too, because a lot of these solutions, too, are big and heavy. There are other camera tripod mount solutions, but this you can throw in your bag, take it with you. You can probably have multiples if you have multiple devices, I guess. It also, like you said, doubles. You can clip it on the edge, and it doubles as a little stand. So if you're on the plane going to shoot photos somewhere, you can watch a movie.
Yeah, absolutely. It's multifunctional. So, yeah, it's, try to keep it simple and small and light. So, yeah, it's kind of this thing that you can just, throw in your bag and kind of always have it with you.
Can I ask you about the name? Glyph. Where does that come from?
Sure. So, basically, we were trying to come up with names for it, and we were thinking, mount or stand, trying to speak to the function. And then, as we were doing the, iterative design process, we realized it had this pretty unique shape, kind of like a typographical glyph, like this flourish. So that's spelled G-L-Y-P-H, and so we changed the spelling so, we'd maybe get indexed a little higher on Google. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's a really great name. Really great name, really great product. What does it cost, and where can people find out more information and maybe pick one up?
Okay, so we're selling it at theglyph.com, and again, it's theglyph.com, and it's $20 online, and we ship internationally, so yeah, you can buy it there.
All right, great. People should check it out. Thanks a lot.
Hey, you bet. Thanks.
All right, I'm over at Seagate, and anybody who listens to my podcast knows that I'm a huge Seagate fan. They're the drives I use for my backup, but I walked over, and this booth's all about GoFlex, and I had not heard about GoFlex, believe it or not, even being the Seagate fan that I am. So I have Leo here. Tell us a little bit, what is GoFlex?
So GoFlex is our new series of hard drives meant to be flexible. You can actually interchange the interface so you no longer have to be attached with one type of interface. So our products all offer different interfaces aside from just the storage device itself.
Right. So all of these drives have a little connector piece that goes on, an adapter on the back. It plugs into, you were saying, just the regular SATA.
Yes, the SATA interface on the back of the drive, so it's just as though you were using a bare drive in the back, and you attach this adapter that attaches to the SATA interface, which outputs to whichever other interface you're using.
Right, so then on the other hand, you have your different interfaces, USB 2, FireWire, USB 3 even now.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. And there's a couple different lines. We were looking at a couple different drives. The sort of what I would call traditional kind of notebook drives or small portable drives, and you have those in a couple sizes?
Yeah, so in the slimmer form factor, it's about 14.5 millimeters thick. It's a 7200 RPM, and we have that in 500 and 750. In a slightly larger version, it's a 5400 RPM. It's 22 millimeters tall. We have that in 1 and 1.5 terabytes. And in the 3.5-inch, which is our desktop product, we have it in 2 and 3 terabytes.
Right, and with the desktop product, it's like a lot of your desktop products where it stands up, and the stand on the bottom is where the connector.
Absolutely. So there is an adapter. Same idea that we have on the portable versions where the interface is removable, we actually have a removable adapter on the bottom of the 3.5-inch, which you can also remove the interface. Now, on the one included with the Mac SKUs, we actually have USB and FireWire 800, two ports for the FireWire 800, so you can do the daisy chain.
Cool. And then the one I got kind of excited about, which is coming up in the line, is a really thin, slim, you have a black and silver metal case. How thin is that? That's super thin.
So the drive inside is a 7-millimeter drive, and the total width of the drive itself is 9 millimeters thin.
I like that for portability. And so the same GoFlex, so you have a USB 3 connector on this one, which is backwards compatible to 2.
Absolutely. So it is fully backwards compatible. The end plug works with the USB 2 plug, now obviously with the speed of USB 2, but full functionality.
Now, I might not have heard about the GoFlex line you were saying, because on the Mac side, there were some things, and you were on the PC side. Now you're back. Can you explain all that?
Sure. So the previous version of the GoFlex we did was NTFS formatted, so formatted for PC. Now, there was a preloaded driver that you installed on your Mac to allow it to read and write to the NTFS format, but without Time Machine functionality. We changed that around, found out how to do the opposite. We have an HFS formatted drive now, which you can upload a driver to your PC, which will read and write to the PC, to the same HFS drive that you were using on your Mac side. So both have both functionalities. It just depends on which platform you choose to use mainly has the two different options.
Right, and now we can have Time Machine support, and everybody's happy. We like that on the Mac side. So
exactly.
Cool. There was one other product I wanted to mention. It's the network product that's in the GoFlex line, because it has some unique features too, including support for the iPad, which I was kind of jazzed about.
Absolutely. So that is actually also works with our GoFlex design, which is a SATA interface. It plugs directly into a dock. There's also a USB port in the back, so you can plug in any USB drive. And it's over the network. You attach that to your router, and you can actually have access for your all your data throughout all different devices, including the iPad.
Right. And you partnered to make that technology happen?
Yeah. So we partnered with other professionals. So Pogo Plug is who we use to leverage that. They're experts in their field. We're experts in ours. And we combine together to make the best device.
A lot of my audience is familiar with Pogo Plug. And the other thing I want to mention on the docking unit, the network unit, is there's actually two slots, so you can put two GoFlex drives in there.
Yes, there's two slots, and it accepts both the little bit thicker and the regular 14.5-millimeter drive. There's a little adapter you can take off, as well as that USB in the back that we talked about.
So very flexible and expandable, so it makes sense. GoFlex, and it's Seagate. Thanks a lot, Leo, for talking to us.
No problem. Thank you very much.
So I'm over here with Sound Matters, and they have a really incredible speaker product for the iPhone, iPod Touch, actually probably any Bluetooth.
Bluetooth or even non-Bluetooth. It plugs in nicely with a standard auxiliary input.
And that's Lee Adams, who we're talking to. And I wanted to start off, Lee, just talking to you about, you had mentioned you guys have been in sound for a while now. What's a little bit of the history of Sound Matters?
Well, the principals behind the company have been in the hi-fi, kind of the high-end audio business since the 70s. The founder of the company and the gentleman who designed the Foxel is a former NASA scientist. He's a nuclear physicist. And he started a speaker company called ADS back in the mid-70s. Sold that company, wanted to do something and try to bring really, really good sound to much, much smaller enclosures, and started Sound Matters back about a little over 10 years ago.
Right. I think this is probably about the smallest enclosure you can get, but it sounds really, really great. So maybe tell everybody, can you describe what the Foxel is, which is the product?
Well, the Foxel is about 6 inches, a little over 6 inches long, and an inch and a half, 2 inches tall, and about an inch deep. And it's designed to fit in your pocket or your purse, and it really delivers pretty true high-fidelity sound for those of us that are used to listening to those big old speakers in the old days. It has a couple of very expensive main drivers in it, which have very extended range. And then it also includes something we call our bass battery, which is actually an extra little woofer, which extends the bass even further. And to make it even more unique, this woofer uses the battery, the internal rechargeable lithium-ion battery, for the mass, for the weight of the woofer. So the actual battery moves as the woofer.
Yeah, you get some incredible sound out of it. And you have a couple different connection options, right, in terms of getting your device audio into the speaker system, right?
That's correct. We have an auxiliary input, which takes a traditional 3.5-millimeter headphone-size jack. And then we also have the ability to, of course, accept streaming music through Bluetooth stereo. From virtually any device, whether it's any of your music phones these days or your iPad, et cetera, have that, or your laptop.
Right, stuff that supports the A2DP, is that, am I getting the acronym right?
That's exactly right. And then also one of the other features that the Bluetooth, we have two versions. One of the units has this Bluetooth streaming capability, and then we have a more basic unit which has no Bluetooth, so it's strictly use it with your wired connection. The Bluetooth version also incorporates a noise-canceling microphone, which allows the unit to double as a hands-free speaker, do impromptu conference calls, and kind of adds to the versatility of the product.
Right, so this would be really great for the road warrior who wants to have their iPhone. Maybe they're going to be doing some Skype calls and things like that, but then also want something to listen to music in the room.
That's exactly right. We get a lot of folks who are into hi-fi, into music, but want something they can use on the road for a variety of applications. You can also use it, of course, for multimedia presentations in a boardroom, those type of things.
Well, I was walking by, and I got drawn in because I was impressed by the sound. You know, I heard some great sound playing, and then you look down, and you see this tiny little thing. So if people do want to see it, actual images of the product and stuff like that, because we're on audio, and get more information, where should they go to do that? And then also, how much for the units?
You can visit us and find out probably more information you ever wanted to know at www.soundmatters.com. And the unit sells for $199. For the Bluetooth version, the Foxhole Bluetooth, and then we have the non-Bluetooth version is $169.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
All right, I'm over with Costa from Apparent Software. They do a number of applications, but one that I found particularly, I think, probably useful to me and seemed interesting was a product called Blast. And if you're like me, you're working all day, you've got working with lots of files, and you have that moment where you need to email it or you need to go back to it, and where did it go? Where did I put that file? And that's what Blast is designed to solve. And they do it in kind of a unique way. So, Costa, just tell everybody kind of how Blast works.
Okay. Blast is a small menu bar utility that sits on your menu bar and monitors all the file you've been using, opening, saving, moving, downloading. And anytime you would like to access one of those files, you won't have to find it in Finder or in Spotlight. You can just click on Blast icon, and a list with chronologically listed files will appear. So the most recent files you've been opened or downloaded will appear on top of the list. And then you'll be able to do anything with those files, like open it or move them or add them to a sticky sidebar to be used later. So you won't have to ever ask yourself, what is this document I worked with yesterday? Where is this application I downloaded? Is it in downloads folder or in on my desktop? Or I already moved it to the application folder? You won't have to check all this stuff. You just take it and open it from Finder, from Blast, sorry.
Right, and it drops down very similar. The look to it, it kind of looks like when you're using the folders in the dock, the stacks and things like that. If you've used the grid or the list view, you'll see a drop down from the top menu. And then you mentioned the thing like the sticky bar, which is where you can save off things. But something else interesting about that, you can kind of save locations or folders where you might move files to, and everything in your list you're showing me is active. So you can actually drag things, drag them to the dock to launch them, drag them, and it'll actually copy and move files right within the little Blast drop-down, right?
Right, that's correct. You can even put applications on the sidebar. So you can have a sidebar filled with folders, with files themselves, and with applications, and you decide what to do with it. It's your personal work area. So some people put their documents folder and application folder. So if they downloaded a particular application from the web, they can just move it to application folder within Blast without opening Finder or without seeing the desktop.
Right. And then you also have some kind of pre-organization. So it's not just making a big giant list of everything. Well, it is, but you can look at it that way. But then there's also some logical separations, a couple little tabs at the top so you can find specific types of files as well, right?
Exactly. We have predefined filters that can show you only documents, only images, only movies, only applications, only folders. So just with a click of a mouse or with a stroke of a keyboard, you can just start filtering the files and show only images or only document. So it makes your recently used files even easier to find.
Right. right. So, you know, if you're looking for that one image that you were working on maybe earlier the day in Photoshop, it's going to pop right up there in the image list. And then we might have things that we don't want seen, and I want to mention two things there. So you do have an exclusion list, and then there's another thing. Well, let's talk about that. So you can exclude files, right?
Right. There's an exclusion list that you can customize to your needs. So you can exclude a particular drive, a particular folder, or a particular file type, or even file name. So you can just select to exclude any file that has your name in it, and it won't be shown in Blast.
Right, that's great. And then the indexing. So I was thinking that maybe you were just leveraging just the Spotlight data, but you're doing a little bit more than that. So it's a little bit smarter than maybe some other things that might be out there, right?
That is correct, because we take data from several sources. We track any changed or accessed file on the system. So if you save the particular file in Photoshop, Spotlight won't notice the change, but Blast will, so this file will appear on top. The same for access files, which you just opened without saving or moved between folders, will be showed automatically in Blast on the top of a list.
They were telling me, for the technical people out there, that you're monitoring what's something called FS events, right?
That is correct.
Sometimes the geeks like to know what's going on under the hood. So very, very cool product. What is the price on it, and where can people find it?
Okay, all of our applications are available both from our website and from Mac App Store. Blast usually costs $10, and it is available both from Mac App Store and from our website. You are welcome to take your pick.
Right, and then the website URL?
It is apparentsoft.com, apparentsoftoneworld.com.
Okay, and then also people should go there because you have a number of other products. So we only talked about one here today, and you have an image framing application, a Mac cash flow application, and then also, I guess this is kind of exciting news, we should probably mention this, you were telling me that you recently acquired Socialite.
That is correct. We acquired Socialite about a month ago from Real Mac Software, and it was really exciting. It was a big deal for us, and we plan to improve the application and make our users really most of our users are already totally happy with Socialite, but many users have feature requests, and we plan to invest much in this application, make it faster, better, better looking, and make our users totally delighted with it.
Well, great news. Well, good luck with that, and great product. Thanks for showing it to us.
Thank you, Adam.
Now I'm here with H Squared and Jeremy. And H Squared, we've talked to in the past on the MacCast. We see them at Macworld. They make really innovative and great products for mounting your Apple devices, Mac Minis, Apple TVs, AirPorts to the wall. And I noticed you had a couple new products this year. One that I'm particularly excited about, the TV tray.
Right. The TV tray is a wall mount. It's actually a horizontal or vertical mount for the Apple TV. We've had an older TV tray, the product's called the TV tray, in the past for the first generation Apple TV. And when Apple reduced the size and the price of the new Apple TV, we followed suit. We reduced the size of our mount and the price. And so now we've got this really cool black acrylic mount for Apple TV. And it's great because you can either put it behind your wall-mounted flat panel display, or you can kind of highlight it out front and right underneath the flat panel. Works either way.
Right, and then you also have the line for the AirPort Extremes and the time capsules and things like that. And one thing I like about that, I talk about this on my show. A lot of people want to know, how do I get better range? I actually just did some episodes on that. And one way is to move your your base stations up higher and sort of let the signal flow down through the house. So these would enable you to do that.
Absolutely. It's just like any other antenna system. Yeah, the higher you get it, the longer your range is going to be, because there's less objects that the signal has to travel through. So the original AirPort base station, the one that looked like a flying saucer, included a mount, and then when these new mounts or these new products came out from Apple, the AirPort Extreme and Time Capsule, they don't have mounts. Now, There's lots of ways to mount your products, but you know, we've got ways to either mount it vertically or horizontal. It just depends on what your preference is for either product, both for Time Capsule and Airport Extreme.
Right, and as people can tell, I mean, as Apple changes and updates their products, you guys go through and you really rethink your product line. And one change they made recently was in the Mac Mini, and you have a new system now for mounting the new Mac Minis because they have this interesting base plate, right?
Right. This was an interesting design challenge for us because we wanted to see if there was something we could do differently to even further reduce the profile of our products when the Macs are mounted on the wall. So we looked at the base station being that it's removable. The base of the Mac Mini being removable, that this was an ideal opportunity to take advantage of that. So we spent several months essentially reverse engineering that design and putting in a system that allows not only you to mount the Mac Mini and have it the mount completely hidden, but the mount itself allows you to lock down the Mac, which is perfect because the new Mac Minis do not include the latches for the Kensington locks. So this is great. It's ideal for public settings where you don't want the Mac Mini to grow legs and walk away, so you can lock it down. And it works in both a horizontal and a vertical orientation. It's totally omnidirectional.
Yeah, you've even got one here mounted completely upside down under a desk, which I would imagine is great, you know, for home users, but also probably very interesting for lab installations and things like that for schools and educational institutions.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the primary intent of that one, is that you can mount it right underneath the tabletop, get it out of the way, still have full access to all the ports, the optical drive, and still be able to lock it down.
Yeah, and then I have one more thing I have to mention for IT pros and things like that. You know, Apple's got rid of the X serves this year, unfortunately, but the Mac Mini server is a new thing that they're promoting, and you've got an incredible system. I'm looking at it now. Hopefully you've got some pictures on the website, or I'll take some snapshots and get them on the Flickr feed for MacOS people, but a Mac Mini rack.
Right. Well, hopefully that one of the 100 people or so that's taken a picture of this rack system will post it on their website. We'll eventually get something up there. But this is it's a brand new product that we're just showing at Macworld. And this is a rack mount system that is designed to mount up to 18 Mac Minis on a single standard rack shelf. So for people who are switching over to the Mac Mini or thinking about deploying the Mac Mini in a server environment, this will allow you to get the highest density of Mac Minis in a rack enclosure and still have full access to all the ports, be able to swap them out very easily. It uses a combination of our Mini Mount product plus a custom design metal rack that we've developed that also includes power status on the front, so you can quickly look at the Mac Minis and know which ones are on or which ones may have failed through this system. So the Mini Rack is something that, like I said, it's brand new, but we're looking to ship this in March of this year.
Very, very cool. Well, a whole range of products and things like that. If people want to go get more information, find out about price points and see images and things like that, well, where should they go?
It's our H-Squared website, h-sq.com.
Great. Thank you so much, Jeremy.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
There you go. That's my Macworld 2011 coverage. Hopefully you enjoyed those two episodes. It was great fun. Always good time going to Macworld. And I want to say thank you to every one of you who came up and mentioned that you listened to the show, grabbed me at Macworld. It's really, really great to be able to meet you in person. If you haven't been to a Macworld in the past, it is happening again next year, and I encourage you to come out. And it's a great time to just get together with friends and geek out on Mac stuff. And you know, San Francisco is always a nice place to be too. The weather was perfect this time of year. Sometimes it gets a little cold, but this year it was really pretty nice up until about the last day. So we had a great time. And if you can ever make it out, I think you'd enjoy it as well. That's going to do it for today. Before we get out of here, I do want to thank all of our show sponsors, Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You can check out their software and get more information and details over at circusponies.com. Smile, Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label are all great products that those folks put together, put their heart and soul into those. You can check it out over at smilesoftware.com. They have free demos and trials available if you want to check it out. And Phoronix, makers of Deep Freeze and PowerSave Mac, check out their stuff over at Phoronix.com, and they also have demos and trials available. Big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MacCast. Big thank you to you. If you have any feedback for me, questions, comments, something you'd like me to cover on a future episode of the MacCast, I encourage you to send me your thoughts, your emails, your audio comments. You can send those to maccast@gmail.com or call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281 MacIam9 is the voicemail number. If you prefer to use Skype, you can leave voicemail there also. My Skype address is TheMacCast. If you do leave a voicemail, it's very helpful if you can leave your email address and spell it out for me, just in case I need to get back to you with some follow-up or questions and things like that. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about in this or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out the MacCast forum at forum.maccast.com. Great community of MacCast listeners and members who contribute, answer each other's questions, try and help each other out. It really is an extension of what we do on the podcast. And if you've never checked that out before, it's free to sign up, free to participate, and a lot of fun. Just another place you can go. If you want to follow me a little bit more between shows, you can check me out on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMacCast. That's going to do it for today. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.